Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the truth and to the largest segment of society, to those of you who can handle the truth, who actually are open to the realization. Many of you have already accepted the realization that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, rotten to the core, counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. Well, I probably won't get to it today. I'm a little hot under the collar as we begin this program because a good friend of mine just sent me an article written by a Muslim that says that the Islamic State does not represent Islam. That's like the Jaguar motor car that I have parked in my garage does not represent Jaguar. That's like the U.S. Marines do not represent the United States. That's like the Pope does not represent Catholicism. And, of course, this moron that would have you believe his lie, his myth, never does quote an Islamic source. And it yet was published as under the headline, "No, ISIS does not represent Islam," by CNN. We'll get to it as the days progress throughout this week. I'd like to begin in Europe, which is a place that is now being invaded by the most deadly and destructive disease mankind has ever invented, the Islamic religion. Germany told its European partners that they must take in more refugees. Why don't we just tell the truth, that they must take in more Muslims? On Monday, as it struggles to cope with record numbers of asylum seekers. Let's just say that these are individuals who are almost universally Islamic that are fleeing an all-Islamic conflict. This is Muslims fleeing, Muslims killing Muslims. Oh, but the Islamic State doesn't represent Islam. Of course not. As police in Hungary used pepper spray on migrants, on Muslims, who broke out of reception centers at the border. Here's the problem, folks. For those of you who had put on your little compassion hat, I want you to tell me how it's compassionate to bring in by the tens of thousands, which is soon to be hundreds of thousands, which will soon to be millions of people infected by a disease that considers pedophilia good, that considers rape acceptable, that considers mass murder the highest calling in their religion, a religion that only guarantees heaven to the jihadist terrorist, to a religion founded by a man who said, "I have become victorious with terror," by a man who said that slaughter was better than oppression. I mean, you're dealing with a religion founded as a criminal enterprise, a declaration of war on all humankind that has destroyed and ruined everything it has touched, that has created a living hell for those under its influence, and has caused migration away from a Sunni v. Shia Islamic war. In what is now tens of thousands, is approaching hundreds of thousands, and soon will be in the millions. And they're bringing the disease with them. Now, if you're of the belief that it's compassionate to do so, then what I would advise you to do is find somebody sick with Ebola and have them live in your house with your children. If you think this is compassionate to do, what I would advise you to do is see if you could go down to, I think it's Madagascar, maybe Borneo, where the bubonic plague, the Black Death, is still prevalent, and you find some rats that are infected with it. You care for those rats. You bring them home with you, and you give a pair of breeding rats to your parents and have them put them in their home, to your children and have them put them in their homes, and you just have them stay with you and your wife or husband in your bedroom. And you tell me all about how compassionate it is to those poor little rats that were infected with this horrible disease. Because that's what you're doing. Islam is responsible for 99.9% of all terrorist acts in the world, and you're importing the terrorists. Islam is responsible for most of the enslavement particularly of little girls, for the purpose of having them be sex slaves in the world. Some 90% of human trafficking is perpetrated by Muslims, and you're bringing them into your country. In Islam, they mutilate or have mutilated over 250 million little girls sexually, carving out their private parts for in the name of their religion. And you're bringing them into your country. This is a religion that perpetrates crucifixions, that and has sanction for crucifixion in their Quran. Read the fifth surah. That sanctions mass murder. Read the eighth surah. That's a declaration of war on all humankind. Read the ninth surah. That tells a Muslim that if they are not a jihadist terrorist, that they cease to be a Muslim and will be tortured forever by their God in hell. Again, read the ninth surah. What in the hell are you doing? And as I shared with our listeners last week, when you accept the first 1,000 of these Muslims, word will get back that you've accepted them. You've created an entitlement for them. They'll come into your country. They will take advantage of every welfare program that you have, just as the Somalis have done in the United States. Be a tremendous burden to you economically, and then behave like Muslims and be a tremendous burden to you, to your criminal justice system. And the moment you've left the first 1,000 in, and you've silenced those who would speak out against them, calling those who are actually far more compassionate, recognizing that it is not loving to bring in a disease this caustic, this deadly, this crippling into your home, as buffoons, as hate mongers, that the moment you invited the first 1,000 in, word got back, and then there were 10,000 on their way. And then when you accepted those 10,000 and silenced the critics, then there were 100,000 on the way. And once you again silenced the critics and you spoke out in favor of more and more and said there should be quotas in every European countries and the United States should do its fair share in terms of importing this disease into its home, there were many hundreds of thousands, and there are 8 million more waiting. Now with word that they're going to be accepted, they too will come. It is a tsunami of Muslims, forever changing the culture, the nature of Europe. And if you think this change is acceptable, this is not like bringing Hispanics into the United States. The vast preponderance work. The vast preponderance grew up in a very similar culture. This is importing Muslims, the vast preponderance of which don't work. And of coming from a culture where everything that a culture that was based on Christianity would view as good, they view as bad. Everything that a culture based on Christianity, as Europe and the United States were, in terms of their legal systems and morals, for the most part, everything that they would view as bad, Muslims in their Quran are told are good. And here you are, bringing them in by the hundreds of thousands and soon by the millions. What do you think is going to happen to your culture? What do you think is going to happen to your civilization when you bring in the least civilized doctrine that man has ever conceived? How profoundly is your judicial system going to change? How much are you going to increase terrorism? How many more rapes are going to occur as a result of bringing in people plagued with a disease that encourages it, sanctions it? This is, for the first time that I have seen, at least in my lifetime, a catastrophic issue regarding immigration. You know, in the United States, for example, on the Mexican border, I have constantly favored immigration. And I know that many of the conservative listeners to this program despise me. Don't despise me. Despise that stand. That they think that immigration is the big issue. It's certainly the big issue with Republicans. And I'm here to tell you that I view the immigration across the Mexican border as of no consequence. Literally as no consequence. The economic issues of it could be solved simply by replacing the income tax with a value-added tax. Everybody pays their fair share. But the vast preponderance come to work. And if you were to put in one other law, which would just be a change that no one is entitled to welfare or food stamps or any government assistance of any kind until such time as they have been in the country no less than 10 years and are a citizen, then you've resolved that consequence as well. But this is a disease of an entirely different origin as we're dealing with the tsunami of Muslims coming into Europe. They're Muslims. And for those of you who don't know enough about Islam, the Quran, the Hadith, Muhammad, and Allah, to understand why it is the most deadly pathogen ever conceived by humankind, that's your fault to be ignorant. Don't speak out against what you're hearing until you've invested at least 50 hours of your time shedding your ignorance. Go to prophetofdoom.net. Read it. It is the most complete. It is the best documented. It is the most comprehensive and chronological presentation of the five oldest and most credible Islamic sources. It takes the Quran and reorders it chronologically and sets it into the context of Muhammad's life using the only two biographical, historical, chronological presentation of Muhammad's words and deeds recorded within 200 years of his life. And when you read it, you will come away absolutely convinced, knowing full well that what I'm saying is true, that Islam was begun as a criminal enterprise, that its first edict was a declaration of war against all humankind, that it is a terrorist doctrine, that there is no good in Islam, and that it is the most deadly and destructive pathogen man has ever conceived. Now there's a tsunami of those diseased with this coming to Europe. Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is no angel, speaking after a weekend in which 20,000 migrants, let's say the truth, Muslims, entered Germany from Hungary by train, bus, and on foot, described the influx as breathtaking. Oh, breathtaking. Oh, this massive humanity. It's a massive Muslims. And, folks, you know, I'll grant you, I know more about Islam than the average guy. You know, I'm one of the few who has actually met with Al-Qaeda and asked them why they were killing us, that has interviewed Islamic terrorists, that has not only read the Quran, but done something only a handful of people throughout history have done, reordered the Quran chronologically and set it into the context of Muhammad's life. After having read and studied the two collection of hadith that are biographical and chronological, the sirah collected by Ishaq and the Tariq collected by Tabari. These are the oldest sources of information regarding Muhammad and his religion. They are affirmed also in the hadith collections by Bukhari and Muslim. And I've come to realize the truth. In fact, it's undeniable, really. The only way that it can be denied is to prey on people's ignorance. But the Quran itself is hadith. No different between the Quran and the hadith collected by Ishaq and Tabari and Muslim and Bukhari. They all come from the same source. They're all about the same time. They're all about the same religion. They're all about the same wannabe God. They all tell the same story. They're all were memorized and reported mouth to ear, over 100 or more years, all written down in the same place at the same time. They're all the same. And Islam is more hadith than it is Quran. Sharia law is based on the hadith. The Quran cannot be made sense of without the hadith, because it has no context, it has no chronology. And without the context and chronology of the hadith, without knowing what Muhammad did and said, Islam ceases to exist. The Quran orders Muslims to do as Muhammad did. And without the hadith, you don't know what that is. So it is essential. They are one and the same. And yes, I have used them to comprise a 1,000-page book that documents exactly who Muhammad was and what he said. And so I know the religion better than most. I have traveled throughout the world, so I've seen the consequence, the great scar that is Islam. And very few people are as aware of the trends in Islamic terrorism as I am. I've written a 1,000-page book on the Islamic terrorism timeline. So I know this religion. I know it as well. I understand it as well as probably anybody alive. So I'm in a unique position as I tell you that Europe and the United States are destroying themselves. They're bringing in a pathogen that cannot be controlled. That there is no weapon on earth other than the truth wielded wisely that is capable of stopping it. And by the millions, they're now leaving the world of Islam, entering the world that had been relatively unscathed by this disease. About 4 or 5 months ago, in conversations with IQ al-Rasuli, I came to the conclusion that the only solution to Islam was to quarantine it. It struck me as the world was fighting Ebola, that this notion that America and Europe can use its military and its diplomacy to invade and negotiate with Islamic countries, to arm them, one side or the other, sometimes both sides simultaneously, invading Islamic countries, was wholly and completely counterproductive. We made a bad situation worse in Afghanistan. We made a bad situation worse in Iraq. We made a bad situation worse in Syria. We made a bad situation worse in Libya. We made a bad situation worse in Somalia. We made a bad situation worse in Egypt. We made a bad situation worse in Pakistan, either by bombing these countries, invading these countries, drone attacking these countries, or supplying one side, the other side, or both sides with weapons. The situation has played out exactly the same around the world. You'd have to be insane to continue the same behavior. We need to extricate ourselves from the world of Islam. So what now, folks? Here's Chancellor Angela Merkel saying that, you know, this crisis is manageable. No, it's like saying that cancer is manageable. That's like saying Ebola is manageable without a quarantine. Dramatic images from last week, especially a photograph of a Syrian toddler drowned on a Turkish beach, have created new political pressure to open the doors. Oh, good grief. Yeah, a little boy drowned. So, what was wrong with the parents? You know, how could you be so warped that you've got a kid and you don't jump over to try to save him? Washed out on the beach. I mean, yeah, is it a shame that a young toddler drowned? Yeah, where were the parents?
Well, I can say from my own experience, because I went swimming this weekend with Neil.
Yeah.
I made sure that, you know, the entire time he was swimming, he was within, you know, a few feet of me at all times. So, you know, just in case You can swim, but just in case anything happened.
You're going to take a boat to freedom, and you're not even going to acquire a life vest for your child?
I
mean, come on.
You would think that would be common sense. You would think that would be like right. One of the first things you'd get.
Well, you think the first thing you'd do. If you didn't like the area you were living because there were people shouting Allahu Akbar on both sides that were kidnapping and raping little girls, that were engaged in mass beheadings and screaming Quran verses while they're doing it, that were murdering unarmed and innocent civilians, and that this was happening by both sides, citing the same religion, reading from the same scriptures, that maybe the first thing you would do is say, I wonder if there's something wrong with this religion. Maybe I should disassociate from the religion and then see if after that I can find a place to live that is also disassociated with the religion. But no. Oh, no, the women are still wearing their Islamic garb. And the men are still carrying Qurans. So, you know, it is a shame that a toddler died. Who's to blame? Why is Europe responsible that a toddler died? I don't get it. You know, how far do you have to swim, Scott, to get from Syria to Saudi Arabia?
I really don't know. Give me a moment. Let me find out.
Let me give you a clue. There is no water between Syria and Saudi Arabia. Okay. How about how far do you have to swim to get from Iran to, from Iraq to Iran if you're a Shia Muslim?
You don't have to swim at all.
Well, you got to go over the either the Tigris or Euphrates River, but there are bridges. They have bridges for that. Okay.
I feel like the best way to do this would be to get in a car and drive. Just drive.
Let's say you don't have a car. Well, you know, these people are, many of them are walking. Do you think that Saudi Arabia and Kuwait are closer to Syria and Iraq than is Germany? A maybe? That's just a smidgen? I mean, what's a few thousand miles amongst walkies, huh?
Well, if they do that, they're going right towards the same thing.
But they're taking that thing with them. So if they're a Shia Muslim, why aren't they going to Iran? If they're a Sunni Muslim, why aren't they going to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait? I mean, there is no reason whatsoever for the West to have to take them in. This is a fight between Muslims. This fight exists because, the United States stupidly invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran and empowered Shia Islam. And Sunni Muslims, scared to death, hating Shia Islam, decided to retaliate. And so the rise of the Islamic State to take on the rising influence of Shia Islam, and caught in the crosshairs are both Shia and Sunni Muslims, because Hezbollah is on one side and the Islamic State is on the other. And we're arming both sides. But the fact is, while you can say that the United States has aided and abetted this problem, it's not Americans that are pulling the triggers. It's not Americans that are enslaving the little girls, committing acts of pedophilia, committing acts of terrorism, committing the crucifixions and the beheadings. You know, it's not the knife's fault or the gun's fault. It is the Muslims' fault. And so the only solution here is quarantine. Stop doing business with Islamic countries. Stop importing Muslims. Stop providing Muslims with weapon systems. Isolate them. If they're isolated, they will kill each other. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't fix them. Most Americans, and I would say it's the vast preponderance of Americans, when you talk to them, the one place that the message we're articulating here resonates is when you say, we need to stop interfering in the world of Islam. Every time we do, we're making a bad situation worse. We can't make them better. We can't resolve their problems. We ought to stop invading their countries, stop supplying weapons, and just opt out. Most Americans know that. My guess is most Europeans know that. But then when you say, for that disease that we have imported into this country, we must quarantine it too. We must make it illegal to openly practice and promote Islam in America. Shut up the mosque. And you say, you can't do that. They've got the First Amendment. You can't do that. Well, why is it that every other amendment, well, then, the U.S. government is willing to shortchange? Well, we're willing to shortchange. You know, Nazism was a religion, and yet we interred Nazis.
Well, then let's take that a step further. Fine. You can't promote any religion.
Well, yeah, I would first, I'd be in favor of that, but that's never going to happen in America. But the fact of the matter is that when a religion promotes terrorism, when a religion promotes pedophilia and rape and kidnap, when a religion promotes mass murder, as Islam is doing, as Muslims are doing, listen to Farrakhan. He wanted 10,000 blacks to go off and kill whites. When a religion inspires criminal activity, then it becomes illegal. You know, you had the Branch Davidians down there in Texas. They violated the law in one way that I'm aware of. They allegedly had shotguns with too short a barrel for Texas law. Now, the fact is that they had the right to keep and bear arms, and there's no limitation on the Constitution's guarantee of such. So what they were doing was absolutely within the Constitution, and yet they were obliterated. Now, I don't want to obliterate Muslims. I don't want to use our weapons. I want to stop using our weapons. I want us to start using our minds, our hearts, our rhetoric. And so the very fact is that we, with all of the laws against owning weapons, violate the Constitution all the time. And when you're dealing with something as destructive and deadly as Islam, as something that inspires 99% of all terrorist acts worldwide, you need to recognize that this is the reason that we have laws. We can't allow it to exist here or in Europe. And yet, what are we doing? We're exacerbating the problem by bringing in Muslims by the hundreds of thousands and soon by the millions. It's not going to make the problem go away. It's going to make the problem close at home and far worse. So there are countries that have argued that taking in too many Muslims could make the problem worse by encouraging others to make the dangerous voyage. Yeah, they are sane. They are telling you the truth. This is a quote. I am happy that Germany has become a country that many people outside of Germany now associate with hope, said Merkel in a conference. What hope? There's no hope in Islam. None. Islam is based on predestination. There's no hope. A Muslim, according to Muhammad, has no hope of getting into the Islamic paradise unless they die as a jihadist killing non-Muslims. There is no hope. In 1400 years that Islam existed, there's never been any hope. Now, if you wanted to provide people with hope, you'd first have to tell them to rid themselves of Islam. And then there is a source of hope, but it's not Germany. She and her vice chancellor coupled their message of optimism. Oh, boy. So poisoning your home is optimistic. Coupled their message of optimism. Corrupting Europe by bringing in a plague worse than the Black Death is optimistic. With a warning to European partners who have resisted a push from Berlin, Paris, and Brussels to agree to quotas for refugees flowing in mainly from Syria, Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay, let me, this is a really tough question. Why are there refugees that are flowing in mainly from, and this would be probably in the range of about 90% of them, the only ones that are coming from someplace else are coming from Libya. So let's say that 98% are coming from Libya, Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. What do those countries have in common, Scott?
The dominant religion is Islam.
Overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
Those countries have something else in common besides the fact that Islam represents 99% of the religion of those countries. What else does Libya, Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan have in common? There's another common denominator.
Probably that they have the most refugees coming out of it.
No, that's a statement of fact. That most of the refugees, some 99%, are coming from those four Islamic countries. What has the United States done to those four countries?
Well, we've provided them with weapons. And
we bombed all four countries. We bombed Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya. Do you see a common denominator? Maybe there's a connection here that we could learn from? Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya. They're all Islamic countries. They all either had a dictator over them, or they were run by an Islamic terrorist organization, or multiples thereof. Afghanistan is now controlled by the Taliban, as it had been previously. Iraq is divided into two warring sections with Shia Muslims in control of certain areas and the Islamic State and Islamic terrorist organization in charge of others. Syria is divided between the Islamic State and the city-state of Damascus, which is controlled by an Islamic dictator. Libya was controlled by an Islamic dictator and is now the territory of rival Islamic gangs. Somalia is a country that is all Islamic, that is divided between warring Islamic gangs. Yemen is now divided between warring Islamic gangs, half of them Shia, the other half of them Sunni. These countries were all bombed by America. America, in every case, made the situation in these countries worse. They're all Islamic. And so, it's interesting, Scott, you told me during the break that a reporter went into Little Mogadishu in the Minneapolis area, which has the highest concentration of Somalis in the world outside of Somalia. And it interviewed people and found that there was a common trend among the young people in particular. And what was that?
They all thought Sharia law and going back to, Syria would be...
Well, Mogadishu in this case, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Somalia would be the best thing.
Yeah, they wanted to be ruled under Sharia law. And under Sharia law, as a young man, if you're immoral, it's perfect. You get to rape as many girls as you want. You get to be a thief. You get to lie anytime you want to.
You basically get to be the worst human being you could possibly be.
That's right. Yeah.
That's
the time in your life when you're young and foolish, and a lot of people are foolish when they're young. And in Islam, you get the raging hormones, and yeah, you get to...
I've been young and foolish, and I've never once wanted to do any of those things.
No, I've never been inclined to pedophilia or rape murder or any of those things, but that's what Sharia law would endorse. And so here, given the opportunity, this notion that hope, they're in America, they're given a free education, they're given the opportunity to work, their opportunity to better their lives, they're given the opportunity to live in a society where law sort of matters, where there is some vestige of freedom. And what do? Do they embrace that hope and capitalize on it? No. They long to go back to the world of Islam, to the very hell that is Somalia. Remember the movie Black Hawk Down and Muslims acting like Muslims? Here the Americans were trying to help them, to feed them. And what did they do? Try to slaughter the Americans. And yet, what did we do? We brought the murderers into our country. Are they appreciative? No, they want to go back.
Under the name of, under the same name that they're doing in Germany, refugee.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's astonishing. She went on to say, what isn't acceptable in my view is some people are saying that this has nothing to do with them, Merkel said. This won't work in the long run. There will be consequences that we do not want. Good grief. I mean, people elected Merkel in Germany multiple times. So you can't blame Merkel. Oh, sure, she's culpable. But so are the German people. And the opposition to Merkel are absolute dim-witted morons. The people who are rising up and saying no to this are, in large part, neo-Nazis. Wow. But it's going to fundamentally change Europe for the worse. And that's hard to imagine, but it is going to become ever more anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, more prone to violence, more prone to totalitarian rule, just as it has and will profoundly change America. We should be very, very concerned. And I'm here to tell you that what was tens of thousands yesterday and hundreds of thousands today will soon be millions. It's already too late.